Dominican Republic, we lesbians who defend human rights are treated as outcasts or even illegal persons. We are subjects who have absolutely no rights that we can claim.
But I've done it all, of course. That's where I started out, was on the street scene. Not willingly, I might add, but this was where you ended up being forced and pushed by a society that wanted to ignore you, in fact, eliminate you, really. Out of sight, out of mind.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A lesbian couple calms Prince Edward Island's wedding jitters. A Dominican Republic lesbian rights defender takes on the church, the state, and the press. And New Zealand MP Georgina Beyer takes on gender, the medical establishment, and coming out. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 20th, 2005. The Canadian province of Prince Edward Island had its first legal same-gender marriage this week. Lesbian partners of 28 years, Dr. Chris Zarro and Connie Majot, were joined in a small ceremony in a garden in Vernon Bridge with an interfaith minister officiating. Despite Canada's new national law opening marriage to gay and lesbian couples, Prince Edward Island wasn't ready yet when the couple hoped to hold the wedding in conjunction with a family reunion last week. They were first denied a marriage license, and the matter had to be taken to the provincial cabinet and the premier's office before needed approvals were obtained from the health minister and a license finally prepared. Staff from the Vital Statistics Office agreed to come in on the Gold Cup Day holiday to hand it over to them. Until the day before their ceremony, it seemed they were actually going to marry in Nova Scotia instead.
A member of one of Europe's most successful bands publicly came out this week. Westlife singer Mark Feely told the UK tabloid The Sun, "I am gay and I'm very proud of who I am. I'm not asking for any sympathy or to be a role model to anyone else. I'm not worried about how people react because I'm happy being who I am." He was already out to his family and the band and said all of them had been very supportive. Although he prefers to be a private person, he went public now in part because of his relationship with Kevin McDade, formerly of the band V, whom he describes as a real companion who makes me laugh. Westlife has had world sales totaling 34 million albums and won an MTV Europe Award. In the UK, the group has scored a dozen chart-topping singles, 5 multi-platinum albums, and 2 Brit Awards.
A non-gay Grammy-winning rapper spoke out against homophobia in hip-hop in an MTV interview broadcast this week. Kanye West said, "Everyone in hip-hop discriminates against gay people. Gay is the exact opposite word of hip-hop. Not just hip-hop, but America just discriminates. And I wanted just to come on TV and just tell my rappers, just tell my friends, yo, stop it." West said that being called a mama's boy in his youth made me kind of homophobic because it's like I would go back and question myself. But he said that when he learned that one of his cousins is gay, it was kind of like a turning point when I was like, yo, this is my cousin. I love him. And I've been discriminating against gays. These experiences contributed to the song Hey Mama on West's about-to-be-released album Late Registration. He won his Best Rap Album Grammy for The College Dropout.
An openly gay U.S. artist who confronted homophobia in punk rock, Biscuit Turner, died this week at the age of 56. He was the gender-bending frontman for the pioneering band The Big Boys until they broke up in 1984.
Blues legend Long John Baldry died in late July at age 64. He was a seminal figure in the 1960s UK blues and rock milieu, starting some of the biggest names on the road to fame, including Rod Stewart, Mick Jagger, and Elton John. His gay orientation wasn't particularly public, but was known to his associates.
Prolific composer of operas and musical plays, actor and minister Al Carmines died last week at the age of 69. Recognized as a founder of the movement that's now known as Off-Off-Broadway, he won 5 OBE Awards, including 1 for Lifetime Achievement. He's survived by his partner of more than 20 years, Paul Rounseville.
New Zealand this week mourned the death of David Lang, who was prime minister when the 1986 Homosexual Law Reform Act passed. The Labour Party leader supported that hotly contested private members' bill by Member of Parliament Fran Wild, which decriminalized homosexual acts between consenting adults and equalized their age of consent with that for heterosexuals.
But homosexual acts are still criminal in India, and more than 100 people demonstrated this week in Mumbai to protest that. Section 377 of the National Penal Code prohibits what it calls carnal intercourse against the order of nature and prescribes punishment ranging up to life in prison. A lawsuit brought by the NAS Foundation to challenge the constitutionality of that law is currently in progress at the Supreme Court, and a key government argument supporting the law is that Indian society isn't ready to accept sexual minorities. With this week's demonstration, repeal supporters launched a national petition campaign with a target of gaining 1 million signatures. The demonstration, a rarity in India, was a colorful affair featuring red balloons and rainbow face paint. Signs included "Love knows no gender" and "Same-sex love is not a crime."
Taking to the streets of downtown Tokyo this week were 1,000 to 3,000 marchers celebrating Pride for the first time in 3 years.
Estonia's capital city, Tallinn, saw its second Pride parade this week, with organizers counting 400 marchers despite heavy rain.
In Nepal this week, the 4th annual Gai Jatra Pride March filled the streets of Kathmandu. Pride organizers, the Blue Diamond Society, said more than 500 lesbian, gay, and trans people led, with more than 5,000 very diverse supporters following, most in costume. The ancient Gai Jatra holiday, celebrated by Hindus and Buddhists, is a time to recall the dead. But it's a merry festival whose traditions include Mardi Gras-style satire, processions, and costuming, including cross-dressing. Blue Diamond announced this week that it's forming what may be Nepal's first support group for lesbians, whose issues are not being addressed by the nation's other women's and human rights groups. The Blue Diamond Mitini support group can be emailed at bluediamondmitini@yahoo.com. That's bluediamondmitini@yahoo.com.
Also launched this week was a new national lesbi-gay lobby group, Down Under, the Australian Coalition for Equality. The last effort at Australian national organizing, the Equal Rights Network, lasted only about a year before splitting up, and the longer-lived Australian Council for Lesbian and Gay Rights shut down before 2000. But the new ACE, founded by veteran activists, hopes to last longer because it's structured specifically for action on national issues rather than being a confederation of state-based groups or of state representatives. More information can be found at the group's website, www.coalitionforequality.org.au.
South Africa's Lesbian and Gay Equality Project, which has been the nation's leading voice for the community, has recently been silenced, at least temporarily, by financial problems and other internal issues. The group has been key in a number of legal cases, including a lawsuit for marriage equality that's still in progress.
The South African lesbi-gay community's only nationally heard radio voice has also been silenced after less than a year. The weekly Tuesday night show is unable to meet the new contract demands of the public South African Broadcasting Corporation's Radio 2000, where it was heard for the last time this week. Producer Maciek Mazur claims that SABC did not negotiate with him in good faith and feels that it bullied him out of his 8 p.m. time slot with unreasonable financial demands. He's looking for a new broadcaster.
China will have its first gay studies course next month as an elective for undergraduates at Fudan University in Shanghai. Previously, issues relating to homosexuality were dealt with in academic curricula only for medical and graduate students. The course will draw on experts from outside Fudan's faculty to look at health, legal, and social issues. Class size had been intended to be 100, but since several times that many students have already signed up for it, the faculty has agreed to expand it.
And finally, in Sweden, it's a library that's working to replace bigotry with knowledge. The Malmo Library has begun a project some call Borrow a Bias. in which rather than taking out books, patrons can check out a member of a minority group for a 45-minute chat in the library's cafe. That conversation is intended to give people an opportunity to confront their prejudices face to face. The project's current 9 offerings include a lesbian and a gay man, plus an imam and a Muslim woman, a Romani, a journalist, an animal rights activist, and, since this is Sweden, a Dane. Actually, Danes pioneered this approach with a similar project running in Copenhagen.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 20th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Really, this should not be difficult, but it is for some, because of the moral issues.
She worked her way up from prostitution to parliament, and she's working now for universal emancipation. You'll hear the liberating message of transsexual New Zealand MP Georgina Beyer later in the program. Who will defend the defenders of human rights? In many countries, female activists, and lesbians in particular, face a special brand of persecution from their own repressive institutions. A coalition of international queer groups, women's organizations, and other supporters campaigned around these issues at the United Nations Commission on Human Rights meeting in Geneva earlier this year. With simultaneous translation by a UN interpreter, Lorena Espinoza, a lesbian feminist from the Dominican Republic, described her own experiences on a panel called Defending Women, Defending Rights.
My organization is called Comunidad de Salud, and I also a member of a group called Gay Association Women's Group. Of the rights of human rights defenders occurred in all countries, and that impunity in the light of such attacks was a grave and generalized problem. In this report, mention was made of women human rights defenders, both male and female, but no mention was made of lesbians who defend the violations of our rights due to our sexual orientation and our gender orientation and identity. We women who defend human rights are attacked due to our sexuality, even over and beyond the theme we are fighting for. However, the most serious attacks go against those women who defend the sexual rights of women. My participation in this panel is aimed at giving a greater visibility to lesbian human rights because of our sexual orientation. In a society in which constantly one denies the existence of the diversity of sexual options, such as is the case in Dominican Republic, we lesbians who defend human rights are treated as outcasts or even illegal persons. We are subjects who have absolutely no rights that we can claim. To illustrate this, I can tell you about one case that occurred in the Dominican Republic. The LGBT movement in my country is rather young, and in 2001, we appeared publicly for the first time, and this before there were only a few limited activities taking place internally among our LGBT community. Here, in this case, in 2001, for the first time, we participated in a cultural event that, under the auspices of the government, dedicated to the theme of non-discrimination. The organizers of this event did not want the participation of our group or other discriminated group. However, our group maintained strong, and we decided to participate nonetheless. And finally, we were able to be included in a space that was granted to NGOs working with discriminated groups. But 2 days after the opening of the event, we received a strong order from the organizer telling us that we would not be allowed to participate any longer in this event because we were promoting homosexuality. Shortly thereafter, there was a public a police intervention. Our brochures and our posters were thrown to the ground and torn. I was thrown out of the exhibition stand by 6 armed policemen. And I was warned that all members of our group would no longer be allowed entrance into this event, either today or in any of the coming days, and that this order had been given by the Ministry of Culture. The 2 main bodies promoting such attacks and were incited by the Ministry of Culture, and these were the Catholic Church, as well as the most broadly read newspaper in the country. This newspaper is linked to the most conservative sectors of the church. the church action was headed by Cardinal and Archbishop of Santo Domingo, who stated that the space we were occupying and all of us who were there should be burnt alive. This newspaper, whose director is well known for obeying strictly to the orders of the Cardinal, said that this information could no longer be spread and discredited the work that we'd been carrying out to defend our rights. Now, suspecting that this might happen, we'd set up a group of solidarity people ready to help us and step in. This network immediately got down to work, and through the pressure carried out by the institution and these people providing solidarity, we were able to reopen up the forum for us. But the story doesn't end up there. It's not enough that we're able to reintegrate the forum. A lot of the brochures and the posters were done away with because people didn't approve with the group we were representing, which is also one of preventing AIDS. A lot of people had to leave the area because of all the scandal and the uproar that was suggested. In fact, one of our friends lost her job thereafter. Their families were harassed, and so the consequences ensued. I myself and my friend were harassed, and we were asked to make all sorts of statements, and when we did speak up, we were immediately verbally attacked. This is only one activity that takes place within a lot of other activities, but this is a systematic pattern that is occurring more and more nowadays. It's not an isolated event. It's just one example I'm giving you, but it's something that occurs to us every day when we keep having to go through these kind of situations. From this situation and from others, we've learned the following. We've learned that it's necessary to tell human rights organizations that as lesbians defending human rights, we have absolutely no protection, no safety whatsoever, because we're not considered as citizens in the broad sense of the term, but we're considered as sexual perverts. That is to say, we're considered as delinquents. It's urgent also to have a clear separation between state and the Catholic Church. In the Dominican Republic, right now, there is an agreement with the Holy See, which grants all sorts of privileges to the Catholic Church to the detriment of other faiths and non-believers. Moreover, such a situation creates questions of faith and are linked to the state. Now, this should not be the case. People can belong to any church they wish to, but should in no case be forced to go along certain faiths and certain beliefs that they cannot go along with. Thirdly, it's important to have national and international instruments which we could use for particular situations. When somebody is persecuted or discriminated because of the color of his or her skin, he can refer to discrimination against racial discrimination, for example. When somebody is attacked or discriminated against because of the sexual orientation, he or she should also have a specific resolution protecting him or her at the United Nations level. But we dared finally to be open and to come out in the open air, and that has become a risk for us. We're not considered as any other common person, and yet we should have the same rights as others, and this is what is not being acknowledged. Nobody wants to recognize and acknowledge the fact that we as human beings have the same rights as everybody else.
That was Lorena Espinoza of Mujer y Salud, a feminist human rights group in the Dominican Republic, speaking with simultaneous UN translation during a panel at the United Nations Commission on Human Rights meeting in Geneva earlier this year. Her comments were recorded and excerpted by This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti, who's also the International Lesbian and Gay Association Pacific Regional Representative. This Way Out listener Dr. Robert Simmons Jr. of Dayton, Ohio, in honor of his mother Mabel Simmons, has issued a donor matching challenge to supporters of this program. Please check out the new information on our website, www.thiswayout.org, to see how your help to keep This Way Out on the air will mean twice as much to us. Thank you. Georgina Beyer is the New Zealand Member of Parliament for Wairarapa. She's also the world's first and most out transsexual politician. While in Brisbane, Australia, in mid-August to address the United Nations International Conference on Engaging Communities, Beyer engaged in an extended conversation with This Way Out correspondent John Frame on a wide range of topics, such as her latest parliamentary effort to ensure legal equity on the grounds of gender identity.
I have a members' bill which was drawn out of our ballot in our parliament last year. It is called the Human Rights Gender Identity Amendment Bill. It is to include gender identity as a grounds upon which you cannot be discriminated against in our New Zealand Human Rights Act. And it was assumed that under the categories of sex or sexual orientation, that we would fit into that category, particularly the transgender, and I use that in its broadest term, the transgender community of the world, but not exclusive to them, of course, because we have transsexuals, transvestites, intersex people. Intersex people do not necessarily regard themselves as part of the transgender continuum, for example, but I think probably it is a convenient way of grouping that group of minority within a minority. In relating this back to the Human Rights Charter and our human rights and our striving for them, really this should not be difficult, but it is for some because of the moral issues. I'm frustrated with the international medical fraternity and those that make the powers, whether it's at United Nations or international global medical fraternities of some sort, who particularly in the 1950s found it convenient to give some kind of labelling to transgender and some kind of explainable reason why it happens, and therefore medical procedures such as reassignment surgery and things like that, or for intersex, for example, determining which is the predominant genital sex and making that person that with operations while they're very, very young and powerless over it, to discover at puberty that actually what they did was contradictory to what is now happening later on. That in fact if they had left the intersex person as they were, so long as it was of no harm to their health, their physical health, then why not leave them that? So, but then there was the social health that was worried about, well, what about when they come to school and what about all of that and social integration and the roles, etc. We can work on those things. But first of all, you've got to provide a nurturing environment. But the point I'm wanting to get to is that these professionals have a control and an important role in our lives, and yet they rely on a conventional, conservative labelling of us, and therefore the treatment of us as far as health is concerned is steeped in that very now much out of date attitude. We know a lot more about transgender medically and otherwise than we ever did before. Yeah. It is indeterminate regarding chromosomes and DNA, although some would say no, it definitely is this, no, it definitely is that. Well, the confusion alone and the dispute between that does not fill me with a great deal of confidence that somebody's got it right yet. Yet there are still conventions amongst surgeons and things like that about how you approach these things. Finally, an example I can give is it absolutely necessary to put most transsexual people through the incredible psychological assessments and all the bloody 2 years of scrutiny? I want that reassessed. I don't think it's appropriate in all cases. You know, it certainly wasn't appropriate in mine, but I had to go through it. And not only that, the expense of accessing such reassignment surgery is way out of reach for many. And don't forget, many of the transgender, probably by majority in various countries around the world, are at a lower strata of society and therefore usually compelled to work in the sex industry if they haven't been able to integrate into normal society. You know, I'm an exception to that, of course. But I've done it all, of course. That's where I started out, was in the street scene. Not willingly, I might add, and at all. But that was where you ended up being forced and pushed by a society that wanted to ignore you, in fact, eliminate you, really. Out of sight, out of mind.
There are moral issues as well about people being open about their sexuality to the general public. I suggested to an E-list that high-profile persons, politicians, pop stars, movie stars, etc., have really an obligation. If they can come out, they should come out, because it does so much good. And it does harm by staying invisible. What would your opinion be about this?
Oh, you're asking me, the most out-trenny politician in the world, and always have been. I have never made a secret of my difference, and that has provided me with a huge amount of liberty and a huge amount of absolute confidence that I don't have to worry about hiding anything, and I never wanted to, because it inhibits your own participation, because there's always this dark shadow that looms over you. It is a personal choice, of course. It is always a personal choice of somebody who may happen to be gay but is living an altogether straight life. And because of the, you know, the obvious concerns that they may have of being outed in job, maybe at risk, and social inclusion maybe at risk, and the family and all of the rejection things that may happen, and quite often do as routine, really. But can I say, for those who fear coming out now, that the liberty that is gained, just that sense of it all being lifted off you, is wonderful. It's like a rebirth. So I offer that as some kind of carrot to dangle if you want to be a happier, contented person, regardless of the difficulties that may come with some rejection. People will get over it in time, including yourself. But No, you can't compel people to do anything in this regard. It must be a personal choice. If people who are fearful of this thing are inspired by those who are visible, because visibility is important for our community, it gives us a focal point and also a sense of role modelling for people. But it is not an easy thing to do, particularly if someone spent a majority of their life to this point having closeted themselves. That is a personal prison that has been encouraged by an uncaring society, frankly. And so being out is far more liberating in the long run, but it won't come without its difficulties, no doubt.
John Frame's chat with the world's first transsexual member of parliament, New Zealand's Georgina Beyer, concludes...
It doesn't have to be about sex all the time. I just watch the world and get out of our pants and hop back into their own.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Uma Kali Shakti, and John Frame contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Your help to keep this program on the air will now mean twice as much to us. Please log on to thiswayout.org for all the details. To sign up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates and or to get our weekly program information messages, please email tworadio@aol.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For more information, please do visit thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WCBN Ann Arbor, Michigan, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, KUNM, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody, stay tuned.